Drones. This very word reminds us about an aircraft or spacecraft without a human on board. But drones are often a friendly companion for humankind. From photography to package delivery, crime investigation to food droppings, the world has seen different facets of a drone. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Aishwarya, your host. In today's episode, we're going to be speaking to Ayushi Mishra. Ayushi is the co-founder and COO of Drona Maps, an AI-powered platform that creates and analyzes 3D maps to develop cities, villages, and neighborhoods. She's a Forbes 30 Under 30 awardee and also has been recognized by the Vogue magazine as one of the 8 women in STEM leading the battle against COVID-19 in India. Hi, Ayushi. It's wonderful to have you on our show.
Hello. It's my pleasure, of course. Happy to be here.
All right. Let's begin with what constitutes your core interest, the intersection of design, tech, and business for problem solving. What brought these three streams together in your journey?
I think it was quite serendipitous, to say the least. I have grown up doing humanities, art. I paint, I do photography. Pretty much like every other middle class Indian bourgeois kid, I studied engineering. So... I think it was to a certain degree an evolution. By the time I came to grad school, there was a realization that I wanted to bring these two or three skill sets together. And over time, of course, even through undergrad and then grad school, I realized that part of my strength lay in the collaborative process, when it comes to two or three people working together, which is where the management inclination came through. And then the tech and business or tech and design actually came together because one of my co-founders in my first startup actually reached out to me and he was like, okay, so we need somebody to do the UI UX. And I was like, people train in this stuff. I don't have an education in it. And he was like, well, you do photography, you do painting, you'll sort of figure it out. So I wasn't particularly good. It's just that I still had a year in grad school to focus on building a product, how to go through the entire process, how to create the business plans and models around it. And having been through the entire process, I realized that I was very keen on that intersection simply because it allowed me to realize or self-actualize in a way that most career options wouldn't have. And hence I started working in that intersection specifically.
That's interesting. It's actually nice to see how those little nuances, you had an eye for certain things. It's great to see how those together came in as experiences. And I'm so happy that you were able to pick up those at different points in your journey. So great stuff on that.
Yeah, I think I was just fortunate, to be really honest. It was just... there were two levels of privileges that came with it. One thing, of course, having been around people who were willing to give you the chance and then allowing you to explore. And the second thing, of course, the ecosystem, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I totally understand what you mean by getting those opportunities in the first place. Because for you to realize those opportunities, as you said, you first need that platform. Yeah. So moving on to Drona Maps. I think starting with the name, everything is so interesting about it. At times when drones are just perceived by people as to help with photo shoots, with a lot of wedding photography happening, and with commercial delivery Amazon is trying. What prompted you and your co-founder Utkarsh Singh to think about drones for 3D mapping and, extract geospatial analytics through that?
So I think I read somewhere that drones are one of those it's one of those technologies that have moved from defense circles to consumer grade products in a jiffy. It's almost in just a decade it's available in your Walmarts, and of course since then it has been predominantly seen as a photography tool. The thing is, 3D mapping actually is an offshoot of its capability to take photographs. So it's the second most popular usage of a drone. And if you take a photograph at a certain angle with a certain overlap on the side and on the front, you'd essentially end up with the ability to create an entire area in 3D maps. And what I think Utkarsh, what really brought him to this idea was the entire perspective about creating reality in centimeter level resolution and being able to use it for different applications. What brought me to this idea was, so for him, a lot of it was about the technical challenge. For me, a lot of it was about the fact that geospatially, this kind of high resolution geospatial data is not available in most emerging countries. So, you know, I mean, as interesting as it is, like, you actually don't know, like, how your village is laid out, or like, you know, which house is placed where, like what is the elevation changes, so on and so forth. And I think maps do tell you a lot about like how that living process has been in a particular place. So for me, that was a huge amount of the draw. Like one of the first projects I did here was the settlement, the resettlement for rehabilitation and resettlement for Polavaram Dam, which is like one of the largest, would be one of the in its spillway are somewhere around 186 villages. And these 186 villages, like if you actually looked at the maps that were existing, there is a location that is available with no idea whether it's on the center of the village or like on the periphery. And it's like a very tentative idea of places that we would be rehabilitating. And of course, like then you created, then we're sort of trying to create new colonies, which are like 15 colonies combining multiple villages together. And so part of what Drona Maps was supplying there was the ability to map the old villages and then like bringing together that information about like, you know, how the village was laid out, how far was the school, so on and so forth, and bringing it together into this one master plan for the colony and making sure that that is really well executed even in the most remotest areas.
Wow, this actually sounds super exciting, Aishi, especially when you said how, you know, drones help to add on. In fact, the images through these drones help to add on existing information that we have about a location. So, you know, I'm curious enough to know a little more on what happens in a typical project. Like, you know, can you give us a glimpse of how this technology works? Like, you know, when it, of course, I can understand that it's going to be used for infrastructure or for development of cities or places, but could you tell us in maybe some plain words what happens in a typical project?
Think of it this way. What basically goes to a client is a command and control system, right? I don't know if any of you have seen Westworld, but there is that like 3D map in the center on which the entire planning of the theme park takes place. So kind of similar to that, like what happens is it's a command and control system, center system that is given to either a state authority or like a national authority. It depends on like who the client is. But they have this entire lay of the land, then their entire existing geospatial data. So where everything is, like whatever plot boundaries they have, roads they have, utilities they have, whatever GIS data already exists is onboarded on top of this platform.
Right.
Now, the second step of the process then becomes that you integrate with, like if you're doing change tracking, then certain areas like which are highlight areas, like either because of flood mapping reasons, like let's say you need, so drones are very effective for flood mapping or disaster management for the simple reason that drones do urban temporary mapping a lot better than satellites. It just captures like temporary changes a lot faster, and obviously like it can be deployed like very very frequently, so all of those things are there. So you can actually like let's say in a 400 square kilometer area, which is part of an entire for example Mumbai district, you would be able to like map certain areas with specific like inclinations, and these areas would be entirely 3D. So there are like multiple purposes for like either using it for a showcase, either using it for flood mapping or geotagging of assets, or like understanding encroachment. All of those things are made possible by the fact that your map now is three-dimensional. It has a z-axis data available as well, and also like it is centimeter, like it's almost 2 to 3 centimeters per pixel if it is well done. And of course, like on the other, just to compare it, like most of your open source like satellite map would be around 1 meter, and if you get like good satellite data, it's about like 60 centimeter 30 centimeter depending. And so it's about a 10x like improvement on resolution. The other interesting thing from a command control perspective is that you can have like, you know, people on the field like actually taking pictures, like first responders, and like, you know, that embeds again with the platform solution that an authority is using for planning. So in total, like essentially what they end up with is a 3D map of a place or like an entire like geospatial map on top of web, a web platform that can be used on any web browser. So your decision makers have access to the entire GIS database right on top of their platforms. Like, they don't need a GIS team to be able to interpret it, like use it, plan it. And I think that changed like things radically, because before this point, like whenever we were using LiDAR data for 3D mapping, or for like extreme high resolution mapping, the whole problem was the fact that this data was so heavy that it would never leave the servers. And because it never left the servers, it was never actually used for anything. And I think like drone data can actually potentially change that entire dynamic radically. And I think democratize the way geospatial data has been used historically. So you are noticing a lot of countries like espousing it differently. So for instance, Survey of India has obviously started an entire initiative for drone mapping of the country, but you also have World Bank working in Tanzania for drone mapping of the country with urban areas with in specific focus. And there are multiple such like initiatives, particularly like targeting emerging countries.
Absolutely. I can definitely understand what you mean by democratizing information, because when you were explaining to me, that's the first thing that struck me. It's basically making data commercially available as possible. And the very important point that you made in terms of the data being bulky and in silos, I think the way I understand about Drona Maps is it's not just about capturing these images on a geospatial level, but to make sense of that data and provide to the client the actual information that they would otherwise need for the development of those places.
I think just to add on to the last aspect, what you were saying, right? It's not just about capturing the data or the images, because ultimately we also started noticing that a 400 square kilometer map, even if it's a high resolution map, like at the end of the day, is a very large image. So you have to be able to analyze them really quickly. You have to actually integrate with their existing workflows for this to be usable at all.
Right. There should be some decision made out of what we have done. So I guess that brings the meaning through it. Yeah. And in fact, one of my other questions upon this was, how is it different from the kind of satellite imaging? And I think you beautifully addressed that when you were explaining as to it's all about precision and resolution with respect to the drone mapping. So that was brought out well.
Yeah, I think just in addition to that, like satellites are essentially like the baseline of what drone data looks like. So technically, they're actually complementary technologies and not like competing with each other. So like all the deep learning algorithms that are like right now we're applying for plot boundaries or roads are applicable to satellite data as well, as soon as like, you know, satellite data starts getting into the ballpark of 6 centimeters per pixel or something like that. And having said that, like even right now, most of the drone like flight planning actually happens on top of satellite data. So it makes sense to take particular areas only in drone data. But if you're targeting larger macro areas, your context is always satellite. Drones give you a micro context for like very detailed planning.
Yeah, and actually explains why you went on to give certain examples of interior and in-depth places and how drones are used for expansion of those spots. So I think that makes sense. Yeah, and you mentioned that drones very well come into picture when, you know, in case of disaster management. So I think one of the recent contributions of Drona Maps includes detection and tracking of COVID-19 hotspots in India. How are you able to set this dashboard and the complete working of it and post it on internet using the drone data? Because we were just talking about how the servers have, you know, these bulky data. So how were you able to, you know, pull this whole thing off in a cycle?
It was actually a very short duration. So actually, we were in Punjab for another project, and the authorities were, so both me and my co-founder, Johns Hopkins, and I'm not sure if you've heard of it, but the Johns Hopkins COVID-19 dashboard. So one of the authorities or officials actually asked us, like, can you guys do this? And we were like, yeah, sure. It'll take us like a day or two. It'll take us a day to pull that off. And so essentially what happened there was not so much drone data in the sense that we had taken additional amount of imagery, but what we had done there was basically making the platform capable of an extended version of inputs, like a different variety of inputs that we were not taking in before. So some of the algorithms we had developed earlier, which were applied here, or the skill set that was there for geospatial data, in this case was expanded to including like patient locations, patient tracking, healthcare infrastructure locations, and essentially like a lot of the predictive analysis and like machine learning, deep learning expertise was re-guided towards epidemiological analysis and predictive analysis of how your healthcare infra be used, or how the disease itself or the transmission of the disease would move. So a large part of it was essentially like we had to adapt. I think the first state we deployed within the first from March 13th was the first time we started working with Punjab. And of course, we started with the idea of doing the same thing as like a COVID-19 dashboard that's publicly available.
Yeah.
But at the same time, realized that because we are working with state governments, the data we had was much, much, much deeper. So we could localize the pandemic, and we could actually, like, you know, talk about a district level or a block level or a containment level at a very
bits by bits in terms of that, like
exactly
one at a time. Yeah.
So it's not even it's not one at a time. It's basically like, think of its chief secretary level to everybody who's implementing on the ground, who's like who's the first responder. Everybody should have the same set of data. Everybody should have like each Zoom level depth of data available. So like, of course, like from different districts, not everybody should have access to a data from another district. Yes. But your chief secretary's office would need data, like, which is very granular from each district. So having said that, like, what we created were these, like, you know, vertically integrated dashboards for making sure that there was one single source of like integrated data. And of course, like over a period of time, in some cases, like whether it's Meghalaya or Punjab, like we have started talking about like onboarding drone data on top of these like existing platforms or command control centers, which were made primarily for COVID-19.
All right. So what were some implications of setting dashboards like these, Aishi? Like what? So we understood that at a state level, people all had the uniformity access towards the data. But what were some of the implications through setting up these things, and how did it help in this COVID journey? Like what were people able to do with this data?
So I think what really changed at this point of time, or at least like, you know, at least my observation of how things have changed in the last 6, 7, 8 months is that the willingness to adapt to different technologies has increased massively, because we had to.
Yeah.
It just was the circumstance. So when the entire COVID-19 pandemic hit, initially all the data that was coming in through Excel sheets, right? And it was rotating like in terms of like, and obviously like there is a limitation to the amount of data you can deal with it. There are obviously no location specific data is harder to deal with on Excel sheets. And all of that was basically leading to, you know, grappling with a lot of dissonance in information, like, you know, whether this Excel sheet is old or this Excel sheet is new. So what we started doing initially, the first problem set that we solved was, okay, so we have Excel sheet inputs. We're going to figure out how to like make CSVs compatible with this kind of geospatial databases so that they can visualize it, like how these hotspots are changing, how it's changing at a district level. The second aspect of it became, okay, so we have to conduct contact tracing in a country which is so populous. So what are the modalities that can be used? So there is obviously like the buffer areas, making sure that patient tracking is happening with a Bluetooth or like with a telecom signal. The modalities may vary, but at the end of the day, the point was that we knew which areas had higher likelihood of an outbreak, or like very high transmission rates, very high R-naughts. Like we did a detailed analysis down to the point of like localized R-naught calculations. So like each time you would see like an increase in R-naught in a district, like the healthcare infrastructure would go in gear as to, okay, in the next 2 or 3 weeks, we are going to see a surge, and this is how we are going to accommodate to it. So I think that was the planning of it became like a little bit more effective.
I think it was also a bit more about being proactive and, you know, predictive about, as you said, like is there a fire going to happen in this place, or is there like a likelihood of another spot being affected. It's a lot more about predicting what could have been and then trying to provide or make use of data to address that.
Definitely. I think so. I mean, of course, like in one thing, I do feel that we could have done better, of course, with migration. We could have done better with a lot of like predictions that did happen, like, or events that did happen. But having said that, like in the short span of time that was available, we did try to, like, you know, predict as much as possible in terms of like how much healthcare infra and, like, you know, pulling things together in the short span of time. And of course, like, there were oversights.
No, I see the point, because it was very difficult, especially considering early March and the late Feb, early March time. I think it was the peak of COVID in our country. And rightly, as you mentioned, being a very populous country, I think we were at a larger stake for addressing a lot of things, starting at both micro level and at macro level. So bringing all of that data into one place and making sense of that itself would have been like a huge hurdle for all of us, and let alone, you know, keep everybody else on the same page on that. So I think what Drona Maps had done about this, and I also personally read a lot of stories around how you had set up the COVID-19 dashboard and the whole work. So I think you've really pulled it off. So congrats on that.
Oh, thank you so much. We did the best we could in the circumstance.
No, I think that really showed up for sure. It was spoken about only because there was so much effort, and the effort did succeed because there was a clarity, and it's so much that you could do in so little time.
Yeah, no, I think we have a very small team, like of 10 people, and we were like all pulling it together, like, you know, in a very short span of time. And of course, like initially it was like entirely pro bono. And even otherwise, like, it hasn't really led to like a lot of financial gain, but the whole point has been that because we had the expertise, right, like this is one way of paying back.
I think somewhere you mentioned rightly that people were more adaptive to newer technologies like this. I think that is something that's more commendable. It's so nice to know that at a state level they have taken initiative in terms of using drone as one of the, you know, key data centers to collect this data and to make use of that. And then I'm pretty sure that this is one such example of getting things very, very clear.
At the general perception has always been that India is slow with innovation. And I think that's true to the largest extent, that even till last year, of course, like we were like a large portion of my expense was going to places and like meeting officials and trying to convince them. So that was a lot of the sales like cycle had this friction of like having to be in the same place. But having said that, right, I think one thing that I've noticed, at least in the last couple of years of my working here, has been that it is not that yes, of course, like the scale of it varies. Like you're not getting projects which are like so direct exposure to projects with 1,000-2,000 CR is not given to an entirely completely new emerging technology. But having said that, there is still like adaptation of new technology and like an experimental spirit that is there.
Yeah.
And also, like in case of COVID-19, I think the private sector and the public sector and the non-profits came together in a way that's almost unprecedented. So in some ways, I mean, I would definitely laud the effort.
Yeah, very true. I think we really did see the joining hands of those multiple sectors and spaces to bring about a common solution to a problem that most of us were facing. So I really understand what you mean through this. In fact, that was going to be one of the questions that I had, because you were mentioning about working with private and public sectors. So I really wanted to understand if that friction of that adaptability was still there. But I'm glad to know, and especially from what we spoke now, it's happier to see that this adaptability is kind of catching up, not just with probably people who are just educated and they know about this tech, but even people who are not completely in the tech space, but, you know, they want to try and experiment with something that could possibly bring about a good success.
I think that's in most cases, right, like at least in our case, we are working with government officials, like or the executive body. In most cases, they have some exposure of it. Like even if not implementation exposure, they know that this thought process exists.
Right.
And majority of the time, it is also like a certain amount of adventure spirit that we're going to try it and see like if it goes anywhere. Sometimes most, like a lot of times actually, like it also, there is a downside to this. Like the downside is that you tend to view technology as a glamour quotient. Like you do my like small pilot or something and not scale it out and be like, okay, we did this. But
yeah.
But I think like that's a short-term problem. Like the more they try it and the more they see the setbacks like that are there. Like, for instance, I think there was an entire period with drone technology and drone-based mapping where people was just like mapping smaller areas and now were like, okay, so we conducted this, now what? And I think the more everybody came to that now what, the better it was for the evolution of that entire technology and how it would seamlessly integrate with existing workflows. Of course, like that also challenged the startups and the companies who are working in the arena to adapt themselves to this changing reality. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
No, I think that now what gives rise to like why use this data and what do you want to achieve with the data that you've collected? Because somewhere, like you mentioned, in terms of the glamour quotient, I think the best part of these kind of technology would be to make use of that data that you have collected. It's not just about conducting experiments and studies and accumulating the data, but as Drona Maps helps in not just tracking but also analyzing and making sense of the data, I think the more and more people see that, the more they would try to understand the effect of such technology.
Definitely. I think the end goal at the end of the day, right, is to solve a problem.
Exactly.
Which way do you go about it with it is like to a large extent immaterial, right? Like, so for instance, like one of the things that we have been grappling with over across these years is, yes, satellite data is not as good right now, but of course over a period of time you would have super resolution, or you would have other technologies which would sort of, even if not as good a 3D, which would take you close. So in that scenario, like our data analytics should work seamlessly and translate seamlessly to that arena as well. And then we like basically embedded and onboarded on top of our integrated command control centers, the ability to do drone live feeds and integrate drone live feeds as well. And this is something that has been deployed with smart cities in India. So a lot of this movement is happening, and of course, like you would not notice that happening on like a very massive large scale. So it's not like drones are everywhere on the sky, and thank God for that. But like we wouldn't want them to be everywhere in the sky. But but as a limited technology, I think with the ability to impact on a larger scale in some ways. So actually, just to take a step back, like the idea of technology being the glamour quotient also actually, like, you know, sometimes backfires. So with drones particularly, of course, like there has been this image of like a defense usage or like a privacy and security concern, which is very legitimate. But beyond the privacy and security concern, there is the fact that, like, at least in the US, the drone industry has actually become like very deeply integrated with the defense industry.
Yeah.
And what is happening right now in India in terms of like, let's say mapping or photography or any of these applications, not just India, Africa, China, a lot of these places, the applications that are being like looked at from a drone perspective are not even remotely related to defense. Mm-hmm. Having said that, like it's very, because it's such an emerging industry, it's very hard to pick apart the different pieces for anybody who's looking at it from the outside. So a huge part of the onus that is there on everybody who's in the industry is to kind of create this environment where we can talk about it openly and create an awareness around, like, you know, what the technology is, what it's being used for, and how responsible each entity is being for the kind of data that they are procuring, which is of course like massive amounts of data that has not been procured before.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think we're more in that foundational phase where we're just trying to experiment and see those different sectors in which the drones could be used. Of course, I think I'm glad to know that with the bits that you gave me now, I'm so glad to know that especially with India, we are far ahead, or rather we are at least far away from a very particular or a niche use case of a drone, which is just going to be defensive, as with the case with, you know, the other countries like the US. And even I've read about those drone restrictions in terms of the privacy and security portions of it. So somewhere I feel that it's good to have the private and the public sectors experimenting with a drone technology, because in a populous country like India, there is a lot of potential and a lot of places where this foundational study could be used, and which is sort of a very futuristic sense.
Definitely. I think I would, of course, like as somebody working in the industry, I would say we would do well to move a little bit faster, but I will take what I get.
Right. No, I think that was definitely a very solid point, and those discussions that precluded that. All right, the next section is going to be like a rapid fire round. So I have three questions for you, and mm-hmm. I'll be asking those questions, and I just need like a quick answer from you, no thinking.
Okay.
Why the name Drona Map?
Well, of course, it's a play on Dronacharya and drone, and like Drona Maps. Also, basically, like having a bird's eye view and being able to use that in order to strategize and plan. So I think that was part of it. The second part of it is that we also do own dronemaps.com. So like that is part of our like larger initiative to open the platform to bigger like other players, like easily available on the web, to be used on the web.
Right. No, I like the metaphor that you gave for that. It was very spot on, especially the bird's eye view part of it.
Yeah.
Right. One quirky project you like to use the drone for. I know we just discussed that there's a lot of possibility, but if you had to pick one which is very quirky, what would it be?
So not related to what we usually do. I would really like to try organ deliveries with drones. Wow. It was one of the things that I was like, yeah. So I'm from a healthcare background, and the implications of drones in healthcare is something that really, really do attract me. But at the same time, I'm aware of the fact that that is like a little bit out in the future.
Definitely.
From an implementation.
I think it sounds very promising also, and especially in the healthcare sector, I think it would be very revolutionary for drones to help in this particular case.
Yeah, I think it could obviously decrease the time required massively.
Correct.
So, increase the connectivity of remote villages with path labs or like any of the primary healthcare centers. But having said that, I think I do realize that that kind of logistical support network and also regulatory support. So technology here is not the drawback, because the technology exists. It can still be done. We need to establish the efficacy of it. So Sequoia is backed, I think, Zipline's doing all of this in Rwanda. I think at scale in India, there's only been two or three experiments, which are about 20 kilometers of flight of a simulated heart, not even a real heart. So yeah.
All right. So the last question would be, you wish you could wake up with the skill. What would it be?
Oh, completely unrelated, but being able to do a pull-up, maybe.
Nice. It's quite different, yeah.
Yeah, definitely quite different. But it's just something I've struggled with for a while. So yeah, probably that.
All right. Thanks so much, Ayushi. I think today's conversation has really been both fun and informative for me. And I hope it's same for listeners as well, because we discussed a lot in terms of both the drone usage and how Drona Maps is shaping up a kind of, probably I should say the future, where a lot of unexpected and a lot of surprising success could happen in terms of how different sectors can put this drone to use. So all of this is very promising, and I hope and wish all the best to the journey that is ahead for all of you.
Oh, thank you so much, and thanks for inviting me. It has been a fun conversation. We'll be right back.